This is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Erin Boberg and Kristen Kennedy from PICA. They're here to talk about TBA 2018. Thanks for coming back to KBOO.
Thanks, Joseph. Thank
you.
You are the curators this year of TBA, the Time-Based Art Festival. Just tell us what your titles are.
Sure.
This is Kristen.
I'm Kristen Kennedy, and I am the curator of visual art.
I'm Erin, the curator of performance, and we also work with Roya Amir Soleimani, who is the curator of public programs.
For all those newbies out there on their electric scooters whizzing around from their little apartments out on 122nd Avenue who don't know what TBA is, it's a tradition. This is what, the 16th one?
Yes, it is.
In a row. And it's 10 days from September 6th to 16th this year of art, performance, theater, all that stuff in very different venues at very different prices. And all over the place. And it's really is a kind of cram it all in for 10 days experience. It's probably one of the best art events in the city. Just tell us about the opening night, because you always have it in a special place and it's always a big event. So Kristen, what's opening night like?
So opening night this year is set in our newish building, which is at 15 Northeast Hancock on the corner of between Williams and Victoria. And we've been in the building since November, so we've housed a number of events there. Opening night usually starts with a dinner, a patron dinner. That is, we have a chef named Matt Howard and Jeremy Larder who run a project called Field Day Feast. So the food's always like beautiful, farm to table, like kind of experimental, but also delicious. And we gather there at about 6 p.m. And then later in the evening, we throw the doors open to the public. It's a free opening night. And this year we have a group of collaborators who are doing a project called The Beautiful Street. They have a history of organizing kind of cypher dance battles and other kinds of dance battles between different groups that stylistically they're presenting different forms of street dance. Katie Janovec, Brandon Harris, and Jesus Rodales are all collaborating this year. And so there'll be representatives who do from houses that do Vogue dancing, popping, locking, all kinds of different street dancing. And so audience members will be able to like witness the show and participate. And we expect it to be really exuberant and reflect like all the various dance cultures in Portland.
So are they from here?
All the dancers are from here, mm-hmm. and they perform, you know, these sometimes different art practices exist in these silos where, you know, everyone who does voguing goes to see voguing. And in Portland, what we have is like a naturally collaborative and like interconnected community. And so these three cultural producers were really interested in getting different groups together that come from different backgrounds and have different styles, but to all perform in the same place and battle together. And mm-hmm. so it's really gonna represent a diverse form of dance, and also diversity in people.
Are these people who just dance like for fun on the weekend, or are they professionals?
I think it's pretty serious stuff. You know, we're talking about, you know, people who have, you know, dedicated to their life to the craft of this kind particular, these particular forms of dance. And the way that they get together to perform is usually in a battle construct. It sounds more aggressive than it is. It's really, you know, quite community based, where like in a cypher battle, there's a circle and one person comes to the center and shows what they can do. And then the next person reacts to that. So it's kind of a call and response.
Oh, okay.
You've seen it in probably like Break Into Boogaloo or those other movies of the past, but it's a really active contemporary form that's constantly changing.
Wow.
And so
where does that happen in real life in Portland? Does that happen in the street?
It happens all over. Erin went to an outdoor event that Katie had some cypher battles at. And so, yeah, I think it's happening all over. There's a group called Adapt Dance in town. There's so many different there's so many different dance kind of crews that exist.
And that, so that's the opening night. If you show up at what, like 8 o'clock, you'll see them doing their thing.
Around 8 until way until the wee hours. And so, but I think part of the reason that that night at the late night is a little bit early, it's not that late, is that we encourage people to come. A lot of times families come with kids who are, you know, Portland kids who like to stay up and see art. And so the opening night is really open and free for everybody. And it, it gives you a good taste of the community that surrounds TBA. And, but it's a warning that it's a little addictive. You're going to want to come back for other things that are happening that week.
Right.
Yeah.
So normally, or you usually have like a big headliner that everyone's heard of. Who are the highlights this year? And, you know, if you just went chronologically, who would you say is the first big name that people are going to look out for?
Well, I think that actually in TBA, one of the reasons that we called it TBA, it means time-based art, but obviously it also connotes to be announced. And so we wanted to create a festival where you might not recognize the names. So I think if you go through the festival this year, if you're somebody who's really attuned to the art or performance world, there might be a couple of names you know, but we don't really have any household name artists in this festival, which I think makes it special. But I will lead into some of the main projects we have opening weekend. And starting with Kaneza Shawl. Kaneza is an artist when we supported through the Creative Exchange Lab, and we actually helped commission this piece. It's called Jack And. And Kaneza has been, she's a theater artist based in New York, and she's been working with this amazing guy, Cornell Alston, who was incarcerated for over 30 years. And they met through a theater in the prison program. And they made this piece called Jack And, which has to, the name comes from the Jack and Jill balls, which are kind of a cotillion ball in the South. And it's also tied into that idea of coming out of prison and reentering society. And this piece, it's actually a very joyful and inspiring work. You might think about a piece about being in prison might be quite dark and tortured, but Cornell is really, you know, has a new lease on life. He starts the show with a stand-up comedy, one person act, and then it turns into kind of a episode from The Honeymooners, because when Cornell was in prison, for some reason, one of the only shows that they had access to was The Honeymooners. So he and his friends there, his community, they became experts on The Honeymooners. So one of the things in Jack And is he is recreating this scene and baking a cake, which he shares with the audience later. So this is one of those shows that's also open to all ages. We have an ASL interpreted performance on September 8th, and they really designed this performance to be, even though the subject matter you might not think would be appropriate for children, it's actually designed for all ages audience, not for, not specifically like for elementary school children, although if you wanted to bring any child would be fine, but maybe more of a high school audience would be appropriate.
This is three nights?
It's three nights at the Winningstad Theater.
Just tell us actually, how much is the ticket this year? Because it always varies.
So we have a couple of different levels of festival passes. Some of the performances are free. Some of them range from about $5 to $25. We try to keep the tickets affordable. And we also have a volunteer pass. If anybody is interested in volunteering, you can email volunteer at pica.org and earn a pass.
What do you have to do to get a pass?
Oh, we have volunteers do lots of things like ushering, helping us build out the theater, working with the artists on projects. We have a great volunteer team, probably about 300 volunteers every year work on the festival, and they become a core of our audience too. So you'll see all of the artists in the festival and the volunteers of the festival going to all of the projects, and really it creates this wonderful community. and for people for buying passes. There's different levels starting with, there's a late night pass if you just want to go to the late night shows for $48 for PICA members or $60 general. There's a kind of pick six enthusiast pass for $120, and a total immersion pass for $200. So we encourage you to take a chance and see lots of performances, as many as you can. One way to approach the festival is just to kind of say, well, I can go out tonight and there'll be shows at 6:30, 8:30, and 10, and just kind of see what fits into your schedule, roll the dice, and come and see a few shows. Is that good on the tickets? Okay.
So, Kristen, who is Karen Sherman and what are her soft goods?
Well, actually, I might punt to Erin on this one because she is one of the curators who brought this piece into the festival. But Karen Sherman is an artist from Minneapolis, and we have presented her work before on the festival, so some festival audiences may remember her piece. And one of the things I think that was most interesting about her work this time is that she's working with the people who construct theater and dance works, the technicians, and also dancers to collaborate on a piece. Erin, maybe you could speak more to that.
Yeah, so the soft goods in the title is kind of a double meaning because the soft goods are what we call the kind of curtains in the theater, all of the soft things that hang from the pipes in the theater. And it also, she's using it to describe the people who work in the theater and the kind of vulnerability and tenderness she has for those people. So in addition to being a choreographer and an artist, she's also a working stagehand and technical director. So she has a lot of experience working behind the scenes, being in the dark for 12 hours, doing that kind of invisible labor that makes the performances that we see so incredible. But those people are often not seen or celebrated in the same way as the people that we see on stage. So soft goods really is kind of a behind the scenes technical rehearsal for a show that never happens. And it also reveals some of the magic of the theater. It's almost like a haunted space or a spirit that kind of comes alive even without people in it.
So it's very meta, but it's fun.
It's meta and fun. I think that's a good way of saying it. Yeah, there's a lot of humor if you think about sometimes you get to listen in to the stagehands' headsets and the kind of inside jokes and things that they're passing around. They're making fun of the dancers. You know, there's this kind of tension between what's art and what's work there. So it's a meaningful piece to us, too, because we had one of our dear friends, T.C. Smith, who passed away a few years ago and was one of our treasured production staff. Karen also had a couple of her friends pass away while she was creating the work. And it also, the piece kind of talks about the conditions of working behind the scenes that can lead to depression or other, kinds of mental and physical health issues for people in those kinds of working conditions.
Split Britches. I've heard that name before. Have they been before?
Yeah. I have been looking around to see if they've been in Portland before. I don't think they have. I could be wrong, but if they have, it wasn't recently. Split Britches is Peggy Shaw and Lois Weaver. They founded the Wow Cafe in New York, one of the legendary feminist theater spaces, and really are probably one of the groups that, if there is a name, if you studied theater, you might have studied Split Britches, as I did 25 years ago, and went to have a internship at the Wow Cafe.
What does WOW stand for?
I think it's Women's One World or something. Everybody just says WOW.
Right.
But it is a feminist theater collective that's amazing. And I actually saw this piece, Unexploded Ordinances, just down the street from WOW at the La Mama Theater in New York.
And this one's coming into ART, correct?
Yeah, we're co-presenting with Artist Rep, which is great. We co-presented last year with Becca Blackwell, which went great. It's great for our two organizations and our audiences to get behind these artists. I think it stretches us both a little bit, which is great.
Plus, they got $7 million last year.
Yeah, they did. So Well, we can save that topic for another time, but I'll say, you know, when an organization gets a gift like that, there's always a story behind it. I think that there's still, an organization that's working very hard to make ends meet, even with that. But I'm happy that they're on more stable ground.
I assume they were flush and they could do what they want now. And
well, wouldn't that be nice?
When was this planned? When was this show planned?
Oh, this show was planned. We've been talking about it since early January.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is the unexploded ordnance?
Yeah, so the unexploded ordnance is a device in a military sense, a device that's underground, like maybe an unexploded bomb or something like that. But Peggy and Lois also use this to talk about unexploded joy, maybe something that you've always wanted to do, or that kind of thing that, maybe someday your bucket list thing. So as you come into the theater, you're asked to write down something that you've always wanted to do that you've never done. And that's used at some point in the performance. I'm not going to reveal it. But this piece is based on Dr. Strangelove. So it's really evoking that kind of end of the world, the bomb's going to drop. Peggy plays the incompetent general, Lois plays Madame President, and they enact this kind of situation room. What are we going to do? But like Dr. Strangelove, it's a dark comedy. So there's a lot of humor in it, and a lot of things that refer to our current time without, beating you over the head with
that being too Trumpy.
No, not at all. No. And they also use the audience, as these artists are very mature artists, they're also working with the elders and the audience to help us think through what are we going to do in this situation, which is, for me, was one of the most powerful parts of the show.
So the audience show up and it looks like a play.
Yeah, it looks like a play.
There's a bit of participation.
There is.
Right.
Not forced participation.
No.
So they only select the willing.
I'm one of those people who's shy about forced participation, and I'm going to go see this piece.
Yeah.
It's safe for those of us who are afraid of being called out in an audience.
Yeah. Right. Like, I sat through one last year where I was terrified of being tied up and
blindfolded. Oh, yeah. I was a little bit terrified of that show, too. Bunny.
Bunny.
But then I heard that piece, for most of from the audience members, that it was quite gentle and like
it was
not scary in the end. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's the thing with TBA is that we can come up with kind of a quick judgment on something based on a catalog description or an image in the catalog or little whispers or rumors. But I think one of the reasons we encourage people to come to what is just available to them at the moment is that part of what TBA is great at is opening you up to new experiences and destabilizing and really eradicating some of these feelings we may have about being in theater or dance or contemporary art spaces. Mm-hmm. And TBA is really a place for audiences to be in proximity to artists and their ideas. And it's really celebratory. And even the work that's dealing with really complicated subjects, I'm sure that they're talked about all day long at KABU, and we think about them obsessively now. We're in a really, tenuous time. These are the kind of spaces, these art spaces, are the places we can work this stuff out in like a bodily, spiritual, like ecstatic, communal way. And so even the things that sound dark, I think they release a lot of what we have bottled up and don't know really how to express in other areas of our life.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO. This is a 1-hour special all about TBA 2018 And my guests are Erin Boberg and Kristen Kennedy. And they're talking about the festival TBA, which runs September 6th to the 16th. What you said, like, you go through the catalog, and I always do this. I just look for an image, and that's all I got to go on often. But one of the reasons I have you in year after year is you give such great context to everything, and things turn out to be different, you know, from what I thought. Just who wants to talk about Robin Deacon?
I can talk about Robin. I'm really excited that Robin's joining us on the festival this year.
I've got to ask, Robin, which pronouns?
He and him.
Okay.
Robin is the director of the performance program at the school, the Art Institute of Chicago. And it's a really interesting program. Their students, for their thesis, make a small festival, kind of like TBA, which I've attended several times and has brought me closer to the artists working in that program and those running it. And so Robin came out last year as a scholar, a visiting scholar. We invited him, and Roya Amir Soleimani, one of the other artistic directors, organized this program where scholars gave these short 20-minute kind of presentations around happy hour time. And they really turned into performances. And it was great to see this also this intersection of like context building, intellectual activity, academic activity, and into like an art realm, right? So Robin brought this piece that was a very beginning of a writing and theater piece he was developing called Vinyl Equations, and performed for 20 minutes. And it was obvious in that 20 minutes that this was really could be a full length piece, and that it would be something we were interested in bringing back. And so Robin went away and developed the piece over the last year, and this is the first time it will be performed for this kind of audience. And so he's really taking artists like Syd Barrett, Curtis Mayfield, probably some New Order or something like that, and going through this vinyl collection. It's Robin and one turntable, kind of putting these odd connections between sound clips and just the method of like even putting the needle on the record into this long form story about the history of music and recording.
Is it a live performance? He's not taped the whole thing.
No. It's live. He's moving records on and off, and the records are the material. They're also what the audience is listening to. But I would put Robin in the category of someone like a Spalding Gray or Mike Daisy. They're in this kind of tradition of monologue. It's him, a desk, a turntable, weaving you through a story. Anyone who likes listening to Radiolab or any of or Radio Voices, I think will respond to Robin's work. It's very like quiet and seductive and funny. One of those pieces that really just captures your attention in this one singular focus for the whole evening.
Is the story about the artist, or is the story about his life, or something?
The story
totally
is about recording, like the history of recording.
Okay,
and it kind of it's discursive and it wanders around a little bit, but the whole time you're kind of being lulled by these little clips. It's sort of like a long form narration of DJing or something, right? You're with that person who has this like incredible collection. And they're really bringing you into the history of this like one like 30-second sound clip, right? And then woven together over the hour, you have this sense of not only the history of recording, but, you know, the emotional quality of music and what it means to be told a story.
What was that thing last year with the James Baldwin focus, but it was a live band? What was that called?
Stew and the Negro Problem.
So I love things like that, that sort of take something, you know already, and come at it from a completely different angle. Is this that kind of thing? Is it in like Lincoln Hall or somewhere like that?
This piece is actually going to be performed in the Winningstad Theater. And there is that, there is this intersection of like the political, the personal, and the experiential, like as Robin's like weaving through all of these like famous artists that range from like jazz and soul and R&B, he's also pulling out like Caribbean folk songs and talking about the voice of his mother. You know, so it really kind of goes in and out of that kind of thing. It's really an oral story. It's very simple. And sometimes we think when we hear contemporary art that there's going to be, you know, this experience we don't understand, right? But a lot of the things that we're presenting are really familiar. It's someone talking to you in a room. It's you moving around with them. We had an artist last year that presented a work that was in the dark for quite a bit of time, Keon Gaskin and Sidoni, who had a project called Dead Thoroughbred. And in his talk back, he kind of asked the audience who was kind of shaken up by the performance a little bit because it was in the dark and it was a noise performance. He asked the audience, like, have you never been in a dark room for longer than 5 minutes? And that really settled into my body and thinking that, like, a lot of the things that we experience in the theater or with art, we already experience in our daily life. And why do we separate it so much? And sometimes you just have to give yourself over to a piece. So this is going to be a really familiar kind of experience, listening to somebody tell you a story. And I'm really excited to have Robin around for the festival.
Mm-hmm. How many days is it?
It's running for 3 nights at 6:30 p.m. September 10th, 11th, and 12th at the Winningstead Theater. And tickets run from $16 for members to $20 general.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have one here that sounds like it's Roman numerals, NXL, LVL.
Next level. So we have the festival runs like day to night. So we start off with workshops. We go into these noontime talks. We have performances like we've been talking about from 6:30 to 8:30. There are various exhibitions around town that we're co-presenting. But Next Level is part of our late night program, which happens every night at about 10 p.m. at the Hancock space. And during the day, it's a theater or a place for lectures. It's a place to eat and to gather. And at night, it really is about kind of presenting experimental music, food, parties as art, right? So Next Level is a group of women of color who gathered together after the election. They're all kind of work in the zone of party producing. And
what, here?
Yes, in Portland, right. In various ways. And they gathered together after the election to create an organization that throws parties for social justice causes. And so we have collaborated with Next Level before on our J20 event, the anniversary of the inauguration. We hosted a huge event at PICA that had panel talks, activities, food and music all night long. And so Next Level is returning as curators of this night, and they're presenting several artists, Serpent with Feet, who's Josiah Wise, and Hacks and Coat, who have, Josiah is a classically trained singer and has this operatic voice. And then the two of them together kind of wander between neo-soul, R&B, and their self-described form, which is pagan gospel. So that's one of the headliners. And then there's an artist named Kelsey Liu, who is a cellist and makes these really spacious arrangements and has been described as having a transportive voice. And Next Level's also presenting Secret Drum Band and Amenta Arrabbiato, who's a local artist who uses her voice through and puts her voice through a series of like looping mechanisms and has this kind of like R&B, hip hop, comedy, soul kind of song practice. And Amenta's also been a resident artist at PICA. So it's going to go from 10 p.m. into the early morning, I'm sure. Next Level projects are always a party and they always have a cause. So on that night during the festival, they will identify an organization and part of the proceeds of that evening will go to that organization. Mm-hmm. So it's also a way of PICA working with other organizations, which we do during the year.
Would you call this work, the works?
Yes.
You're still calling it the works this year, the afternoon?
We're debating it. Everyone always knows it's the works, right? How that name came about is that when, you know, Pike has been a mostly itinerant organization for, it was itinerant for about 20 years. And during the festival, we would take over a warehouse or a high school or any of these spaces and transform it. And now we have a home. And the works was from this building, Machine Works. Actually, the first kind of laid down program was called Machine Works. And then as we moved it, we just called it the works because it was a way of saying it's like the works, like give me the works, like it's mm-hmm. everything and all encompassing in this one space. Now we have a home. So really the late night programming is happening at PICA. But we have an attachment to this history of calling the late night programming the works. And so, I don't know, this is the year where people could tell us what they want it to be called.
But is Next Level responsible for all 10 nights?
No, okay. This is only one night.
So Next Level is just dealing with one night, correct?
Right, each night has a different artist or a different curator programming the night. And Next Level's night is on September 8th. And it's at the 15 Northeast Hancock Building, starts around 10 p.m.
So you have kind of regular evening performances as well at PICA. There's one by Weird Alan Caprow.
Yeah.
Caprow. Is he from around here?
Well, the group Weird Alan Caprow is from here mostly. It's a collaborative group, and their performance is called Self Karaoke. So it is kind of a...
Is that a pun?
Self-care? Yeah.
Ryoki?
Yes, it is. And so they're...
Just got it.
Yeah. They're investigating the idea of self-care and can, you know, how can you take care of yourself responsibly while in this political climate? And they, what they do, so they have their names, like a karaoke handle. It's always a mashup between a pop musician and an artist's name. So it's Weird Al Yankovic, Alan Caprow is their name, mashed together. And the other members are Mariah Carey Mae Weems, Yoko Bono, Jasper John Lennon, and Joseph Boys to Men. So they're using a lot of humor in this work, but also taking this pop music, changing the lyrics and the visuals and making a more politically informed kind of karaoke. So they'll be inviting other artists to make songs that'll be relevant to our time, performing these together. It'll be about an hour long performance.
Mm-hmm. But will it feel like karaoke? Are they getting up and pretending they're coming out of this audience?
You know, this is a new performance, so I'm not sure exactly what they'll do, but in their past iterations of Weird Al and Capro, there has been a lot of an audience involvement, and it's been a very participatory kind of project. So I think you could attend in the spirit of maybe being one of the people who jump up there, but I'm not sure if that'll happen or not.
You have a show that sounds a bit highbrow, Contralto, which is by Sarah Hennies.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Yeah, so Sarah Hennies is a composer we're co-presenting with Third Angle New Music. And Sarah works in this kind of composition, this kind of form that uses some instruments that you might be familiar with and some non-musical approaches to sound making. And she also works with video. The name contralto comes from, it's the lowest female singing voice. And the video is about this kind of vocal feminization training that some trans women go through, because when they go through their hormonal transition, it doesn't actually affect the voice, which not a lot of people know. But that can result in some awkward or even dangerous situations for trans women in life, having a quote-unquote male voice. So Sarah and some of her friends and colleagues went through this vocal feminization training and have made a video. So you'll see the images of the women, the vocal training combined with the live performance with Third Angle and Sarah there. So it may sound a little highbrow, but I think that the music is actually rather approachable. You can see how they're making the sounds, how it connects to mm-hmm. the video, how it connects to the voices of the women in the video.
Are they singing recognizable songs?
They're not really singing. They're doing more like vocal training exercises. So you can kind of get a sense of what it would be like to try to alter your voice, and that kind of interesting and awkward relationship between voice and gender.
Mm-hmm. Where is that?
That's also at PICA. Uh-huh. So we're going to be very busy. That one is on September 13th and 14th at 7:30 p.m. Really, we have shows almost every day at PICA at 6:30, 8:30, and 10. This one's at 7:30. But we tried to schedule it so that you could really see a couple shows in a row, have a chance to go out, get something to eat, have a drink, and spend quite a bit of time there.
Are you're still using the traditional venues, though, like Lincoln Hall?
Yeah.
And Portland 5?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, really, when we're looking at supporting artists' work, we're trying to look at the kind of ideas and forms that artists are working in and try to find the environment that's most supportive for the kind of work that they're making. Some artists really like working in the kind of raw warehouse venue that we now have with PICA, and it's something that we've often looked for in the city, and we have used in these temporary venues. I think when you come to PICA, it looks similar to some of the warehouse venues we've used in the past. It's a little bit, I mean, we know that we're going to be there longer, so we've done some things to improve it, like we have bathrooms instead of porta potties or things like that. But it still retains that very raw warehouse space, which is what a lot of artists are looking for mm-hmm. As kind of a context, as a frame for their work. So we have the larger warehouse space, and then next to it, the smaller space that we call the annex. It's currently sort of like a black box theater.
Oh yeah, yeah, that mm-hmm. windowless space yeah. at the back by the bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and both of those spaces can be transformed into all kinds of different configurations, used for exhibitions or screenings or residencies or performances. So this year will be the probably the most performance heavy we've done really scheduling wise. We have a lot of Google spreadsheets going about, you know, how are we working all of the tech schedules and the performance schedules and sound bleed and everything to make sure we can do all of those projects, support all of those projects well in that mm-hmm. time.
I remember one, it happened on September the 11th, and it was a couple of Japanese people mm-hmm.
yeah.
writhing around in the Jameson Square fountain
yeah.
in very, very slow motion.
Yeah.
Yes, and that was Aiko and Koma. That was our very first festival. And it was also the first anniversary of September 11th. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's right. And so that, 2012.
That piece happened in Jameson Square.
2002, mm-hmm. sorry.
Mm-hmm. It happened in Jameson Square right as the park was kind of being open. The trees were just saplings.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting to go back now and see where that park has gone and know that part of our first festival was like christening that space with an art event.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also one of those things where I think we didn't know who would come to the festival. It was such a new idea. And then we watched people like coming from all sides of the park and gathering. We had an incredible crowd of people. And it really set the stage for what TBA would become.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I remember another one. It was like two English blokes singing Cat Stevens' yeah. Wild World mm-hmm. in the street or something. They yeah. were inside, then they came out. So yeah. there are these things where the audience kind of follows around,
yes.
right? Have you got any of that this year?
We do. We have several performances that meet at PICA and then disperse to different locations. I think the one that I can speak to is by Ji Yang, who is a young artist from China who's currently living in Chicago. And Ji also works in this kind of abstract storytelling model. And so people will meet at PICA, and then they'll be led on what is a theater piece or a performance art piece towards Memorial Coliseum and around Memorial Coliseum. And G is often blending conversations around architecture, human experience, and kind of picking out these things that are really overlooked in your viewscape of wandering around a city and weaving them into this like surrealist project. So in that case, audiences are really showing up to let the artist take them on a journey.
So this piece by Ji Yang, when can the public go and see it?
Sure. The piece is called Foot Sun Sticky Ground, and it's happening on September 15th at 11 a.m. and 3:30 p.m. And then again the following day on September 16th at 11 a.m. and 2:30 p.m.
And that's also a free performance, but you should make a reservation because it's a very limited, limited to 34 people.
My name's Joseph Galvin. You're listening to a one-hour special of Art Focus. I'm talking with Erin Boberg and Kristen Kennedy of PICA, and they're here talking about TBA 2018, the festival that runs September the 6th to the 16th. So there's certain words you can't say on the radio, but there's one word we always say when we're talking about PICA, vaginal. You have an artist called Vaginal Davis.
Mm-hmm. I pronounce that vaginal,
but
Vaginal Davis is an artist, a very important artist who's been working over the last 30 years. And they're presenting a performance called Sassafras, Cypress and Indigo, Black Images and the Emotive Notion of Freakishness, which is a performative lecture. And Vag, for short, is an intersex person who has been working in performance and playing with gender and race for many years, was very active in the downtown New York scene, now lives in Berlin, ran a program for a long time called a film event called Contemporary Vinegar Syndrome at the Arsenal.
Where's that? In Portland?
No, not in Portland.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no,
somewhere else.
She doesn't live in Portland.
Okay.
And so Vaginal has like a way, it's kind of like hanging out with the greatest talk show host, you know, really exuberant, also winding, confrontational, funny, and is really at the forefront of this kind of conversation about gender and race. And her name, Vaginal Davis, is a play on Angela Davis's name. And so she'll really be talking about like the Black experience and what it means to be a woman.
And this is the one with a kind of blaxploitation poster.
Yeah, Vaginal also is really active in visual art and is an artist. And this lecture performance is a collaboration between PNCA and Adams and Ullman and PICA. And Adams and Ullman is a gallery in downtown Portland, and they represent Vaginal's visual artwork. And there'll be an exhibition of their work on display during the festival. And Vaginal's also included in an exhibition called Between, which is happening at the Portland Art Museum. It's up right now, and it's also up through the festival. So there's a couple of different ways you can intersect with her work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have a food program. Is it kind of foodie elitist, or can anyone afford it?
Anyone can really afford our food program. At night, we have this space outside of PICA. We close off the street, and this year we're calling it the patio. We're building out a space that is going to be hosting the lectures, some of the noontime lectures, and is also hosting this program, the TBA food program, which is organized by Spencer Byrne Sears, who's PICA's exhibition director. And the program really is intersecting with immigrant food makers in our neighborhood. who run different businesses, and they're presenting their food and their food ways and discussing where their food intersects with art and culture in Portland. And so we have this Indian Fijian restaurant called the Big Elephant Kitchen, who's coming and cooking. Miss Taconis, which is a contemporary taqueria that serves vegan tacos and tortas. And it is trying to create a safe space for POC and queer people. And we're also presenting this one night only dinner called Tender Table, which is an art event that's curated by Stacey Tran on September 15th. It's $5 to $15 sliding scale. And on that night, Tender Table is a event series that talks about stories about food, family, identity, and it's run by femmes of color and non-binary people of color. So this kind of intersection of art and social justice has always been really important to PICA, but what we're doing currently is turning over the curatorial reins to artists who are really working in this field directly and asking them to create events. And so Tender Table is one of those projects.
Is it food carts?
No, it's not food carts. These are food purveyors that run either little spaces or pop-ups. Big Elephant Kitchen is a restaurant that's on Williams Avenue that the PICA staff goes to all the time. And so we're new in the neighborhood and we're getting to know those who live and work in the neighborhood and inviting them to participate in TBA as well.
Mm-hmm. So this year there's three curators, right? You used to have one. What's going on? How do the three of you work together?
So for the past years, we've had different models of artistic directors for the festival. And we have had, Roya and Kristen and I have all been on the PICA staff for years, different lengths of time, and have all participated in different ways curatorially with the festival. So now we're the three artistic directors of PICA. So it's a shared and collaborative model. And we like to say we value collaboration over consensus. So we really bring projects that we're interested in together to discuss, and we'll each champion and take the lead on different projects and find where the connections are in between the projects. We'll help each other get outside of our own comfort zones in terms of the kind of work we're seeing or the kind of work we're familiar with. We're trying to use that model also to invite other voices into the conversation. It's something that PICA has always done, but I don't know if the structure has always led to that being recognized.
I think it's a little bit like the women behind the curtain situation, because Erin, of course, has been producing and curating on the festival since 2003, and I've curated the visual program since 2006. So the festival and PICA in general is really a collaborative grassroots effort. We don't always look that way because we have nice design and we make that slick catalog. But really, if you came to the office, you would quickly see that we can't afford to not be collaborative with each other. And we're also really interested and as PICA and as individual curators of where different fields and genres intersect. And so there's been, kind of a public conversation around in our field about the intersection of performance and visual art for many, many years. And now, since major museums are canonizing dance, like the Whitney and MoMA present dance now, PICA really was at the forefront of this conversation of that intersection. And that's what the festival has been about, presenting mm-hmm. all of these forms from nightlife to high-minded performance to dance to contextual lectures side by side. It was really the first festival of its kind in North America and continues to really lead that charge. So if you really think about how to evolve as an organization, this kind of multi-head model that's more reflective of our ethics and practice just started to make sense. And now that those boundaries are broken down between performance and visual, we can have curators of different ilks working together across programs very easily. Roya Amir Soleimani is the curator of public engagement, another kind of buzzword that's thrown around in the field. Public engagement, I think, comes out of many different institutions trying to make authentic connections with their audiences and contextualize work. And so oftentimes it comes up through an education department in a museum or other places. At PICA, it's a little bit different. The curator of public engagement is a curator. They're making programming that intersects with the performance and visual art, and they're also authoring independent programming. Like Roya was one of the lead curators on the Sound Symposium that we held this year, which is a collaborative effort across many different institutions that was held at PICA. Roya also worked with me on the exhibition of Steve Dalton's work and helped originate and organize 3 days of activities during that project around World AIDS Day, which included lectures, film screenings, and other activities. So we're really working collaboratively to enhance each other's programming, to bring our kind of knowledge of the different fields together, and to kind of dismantle this idea that there's one voice at the top of institutions.
What happens when big institutions start copying what you're doing? Does that make it more difficult for you?
No, I don't think so, because I think that the way that we're really happy for artists when they get like properly contextualized. We wish that bigger institutions would pay artists, especially visual art organizations. But I think that our relationships with artists are developed over many years through a lot of like commissioning and presentation of very new work when they're at like this new point of their careers. A lot of them are emerging artists, but some of them are master artists that are just exploring a new topic. And PICA, as well as many of the contemporary art, like mid-size presentation organizations across the country and in Europe and Asia and other countries, really get behind this work very early on. And we get behind it so that it can kind of rise and meet the tide of art practice. So it doesn't make it more difficult. I think that, we're really just we operate in this space, which is always trying to be generative, you know? So when things become historic, they go off to another institution.
I saw Young Jean Lee's name a couple of years ago, I think. And she was here doing her King Lear kind of reworking of Shakespeare's King Lear. Are there people like that? Well, I see names like that I saw here years ago, and they're still, you know, they're big. They're in the New York Times, that kind of thing. Do you have any people like that when you look back that you're particularly proud of, that you got them early?
That's a really good question. I mean, I think some of them we do bring back. But I think like Nature Theater of Oklahoma, we had very early on. I think there are some artists that people will think about in getting to see in a show where they were in an audience of 50 people or something like that. And I also am really proud of a lot of our local artists. We had Kian and Sidoni, who we mentioned earlier, are going to be performing at the new PS122, which is now called PS New York, and I can't get used to it, but they're going to be presented there. You know, often we'll see our local artists who are in the festival get the attention of visiting curators nationally and internationally and go on to perform their work, you know, in Australia and Europe. And I think those are the ones that I'm really the proudest of, even if it's not necessarily the big name, but just seeing somebody special from Portland really getting their work seen. And that's, you know, one of the reasons we include a lot of local artists in our programming, but also a lot of local artists in our audience are meeting those curators and making those relationships with the visiting artists. And it can really lead to some great relationships over time that support their work.
I think that when artists are coming here from around the world and from around the country, we hear time and time again that they love Portland audiences. And many of them come back to debut new work here because it's open, it's critical, and I think TBA, amongst other organizations in town, have a lot to do with that. You have 16 years of an audience attending, you know, this great contemporary art festival right in their hometown. A lot of people who've been attending the festival have seen more work than some contemporary performance curators. And so we have a very astute audience, but we also have an audience that's really just open. And we talk a lot about the core kind of community around PICA are curious people. So you don't have to like love art, but if you're a curious person and you want to like follow that lead, then definitely the festival is for you. And you will see the artists that we present probably 5 years later getting like a cover page in the New York Times.
So are one of those artists I think that you'll be hearing about in the New York Times is Andrew Schneider, and his piece After will be the closing weekend of the festival, September 14th and 15th. I would really say this is one of the pieces not to miss in the festival people will be talking about. Kristen and Vic and I all saw it in New York, and we've seen lots and lots of performances. I think we were all really stunned and just dazzled by this performance. It's almost hallucinatory, the effects that happen in the piece. It's a theater piece, but uses a lot of really precise edits. So it feels like you're watching a film and you're seeing it all live. There's no, you know, there's no smoke and mirrors. It's really just, you know, the magic of the theater. And it's a very philosophical kind of metaphysical piece, what they're talking about.
I describe it as an episode of being inside an episode of Black Mirror. So it's psychological. It feels sci-fi, but then it like erupts into something like really joyous. And I would say if there's any theme in the festival, we've been using this word joy a lot. We've been talking about labor, and this piece kind of reflects both of those things, you know, the human experience.
What's it called? Andrew Schneider's
After.
After. My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to an hour of Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Erin Boberg and Kristen Kennedy. They were here talking about TBA 2018, which runs from September 6th to the 16th. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thank you.
Thank you.